Lately, I've been feeling like my impending marriage to Justin Bieber is kind of stuck in the pipeline, so to speak. So what I've decided to do is make him a very special sandwich every day until God destroys the very fabric of time. And this is not at all a signal of personal derangement or anything. Okay, so let's see what I can make today. I'm going to pick some nice wheat bread and Canadian bacon because Justin is Canadian, and no cheese because dairy makes Justin throw up on stage. An avocado, because I'm not really entirely sure why, and onions, because when we kiss, we'll both have onion breath. And I'm going to put in a small piece of my own earlobe that I cut off so that Justin will think of me when he eats it. Now I'll cut the crusts off, like so. And now I just have to get him to come and eat it. Here, Justin Bieber. Justin. Baby, baby, Justin. Come here, Bieber. Well, this might take a while, so today on the nose, heterosexual sandwiches, homophobic pasta, Ted Cruz, and toilets without borders. They're all connected. And now, the ghostwriter for all of Kanye's profanity-laced rants, Colin McEnroe.
I'm not proud of it, but it's freelance work. All right, so those are the topics today, and they are all connected. It all winds up in a toilet with no wall around it. We'll tell you about that as we go along. Or maybe I'll tell you about it sooner rather than later. First of all, let me tell you who's here. This is The Nose, so you're here. And then our panelist from Trinity Cine Studio is James Hanley from his own world of being a demon guitar player and producer of many things, audio, visual, and everything, is Jim Chapdelaine. And similarly, a multifaceted comedian, dancer, dance impresario, actress, Carolyn Payne. I'm sure I left out various things that various people do, but they'll drop sly allusions to them as we go along here today. Some of the things we'll be talking about. Yes, we'll be talking about, in fact, a woman who appears to be in the middle of trying to woo her man into giving her an engagement ring. She's a journalist, I might add, by making him a series of sandwiches, 300 sandwiches to be exact. And also we'll be talking about the head of Barilla Pasta, the head in Italy of Barilla Pasta, who basically is saying that he would not make a commercial in which gay people were assembled as a family eating his pasta. As we go along, also Ted Cruz. We have to say something about Ted Cruz. We're not 100% sure what to extract from his 20-hour speech. I think maybe we all heard something a little bit different. So we'll find out what our panelists heard. And lastly, Slate Magazine did do a big piece about a trend. Although actually, I saw this trend many years ago in an area house. But it's the whole idea of bathrooms without walls, having the bathroom be part of the general living space, open plan bathrooms. Not a trend that I embrace, but we'll find out what else people have to say about it. But we are going to start out with the story of Stephanie Smith. You may have seen it. It's been everywhere this week, including she's been on the Today Show trying to explain it, Gawker, New York Magazine, you name it. It's 50 Shades of Bread. It's if you liked it, you should have put some lettuce on it. It's all about her goal to her boyfriend's insistence that if she wants to get married to him, she has to make him sandwiches. He wants sandwiches made on a pretty regular basis. We're talking about 300 sandwiches. I think at a recent count, she was 124 sandwiches away from an engagement ring. And she's doing a blog where she describes all these sandwiches. There's a whole lot of other subtext to it, which will come out quickly in our discussion. I'm sure if you've been following it, have your own thoughts about it. 860-275-7266. 860-275-7266. Carolyn, I know from our correspondences before the show, you have some thoughts about this.
Yeah, I'm pretty outraged.
Before you start, could you get me a sandwich?
Oh, there are words that I want to use to respond to that. When I first saw the headline for this, I think it was like on BuzzFeed or something I was cruising through, I didn't even want to click on it. Mm-hmm. I just didn't even want to justify what was going on here. To me, this is like some twisted ploy on her side for fame. I mean, she's clearly this has potential for some sort of, you know, movie deal or book deal or something where, you know, I'm sure there's
reality show.
Great reality show, some great romantic outcome. But really, if your romance is predicated on some sandwiches, get out fast. I just cannot understand as a woman, as a young single woman, ever doing this, ever. I mean, maybe that's why I'm single. Maybe because I won't, you know, I call this like the Rumpelstiltskin task of having to spin sandwiches into ring gold. But
but you actually, you said you'd rather be single than...
I would rather be single than do
anybody's
that.
Anybody's damn sandwich.
Yeah. Yep. It's the truth. So if you're, you know, looking to date me, don't you dare ask me to make you a sandwich.
I always feel so bad when we're at this early point of the nose because I realize that Tom Ashbrook's been on earlier, you know, and he does kind of a roundtable talking about, you know, our thaw with Iran and the report on climate. And I'm thinking, we're talking about sandwiches. But that's okay. That's who we are. That's why. But, you know, Jim Jeptolian, even the way that you said that, the insouciant way that you said before you begin, could you make me a sandwich? Why is that such a tripwire? I mean, it is, too. There's something about it. If you'd said something else.
Doesn't it kind of go back to, like, Maggie and Jiggs and in the comic strips and when or black and white TV where Ward would ask June for a sandwich and those sort of stereotypes and icons that have been broken to pieces over the years, but she's sort of reconstructing it, maybe for her own advantage and maybe not, but maybe this guy really is that creepy.
Why can't
he looks that creepy. I will point out he looks like Julian Assange's, like, sort of weird cousin that nobody talks to at the parties.
Yeah,
but they
mean,
feel
it looks
obsessed
aside,
to be together.
Right. Yeah.
But what I can't understand is why doesn't she just bang out, you know, 300 PB&Js? If some guy was like, make me 300 sandwiches and I'll marry you,
well,
if I really
that's
wanted
that's not
it.
The point. I think the point is to discuss each sandwich.
And to get a blog out of it.
And get her movie deal, her book deal. She'll be on the Today Show.
Well, that's it. She's either desperately insecure and needs to do this, or my other thought is it's kind of like the 15 minutes of fame principle. You know,
sure.
It's like an event at the Andy Warhol factory. You know, it's like that's the day's event, right? And that will get her, you know, the notice so that when she goes in, oh, yeah, you're a sandwich woman, right? And it sort of like completely disconnects from anything about what it really means. I mean, I have to say, I agree with you, Carolyn, that it's like, how can anybody be perfectly serious about this as being anything to do with relationship in any serious way?
It can't be, right? It's got to be like a joke. It's like a big meta thing on sandwiches.
Well, I wondered about that, too. And I may have delved deeper into this than anybody should have even. But sort of reading some of the little exchanges between them. And, for example, there was a bad moment when she had made a fried egg and avocado sandwich. I mean,
that was the uninspired
sandwich? Yeah, exactly. That was the sandwich which he was very displeased with.
Get back in that kitchen.
It was like that. It was like, you know, this. He said, this looks like you put no thought into this particular sandwich. I can't even look at Carolyn while I'm talking about
does
this.
Does she have any requirements of him?
Yeah, I mean, what is their future life going to be if this is even successful?
Right. But there was sort of a, you know, there was a domination and submission quality to the whole exchange that they were having.
Exactly.
And I'm sure it's very stagey. I mean, I'm with you. I can't believe that who knows what goes on in anybody's relationship. Most people have very weird relationships. They just don't blog about them. Well, they do increasingly. But anyway, but I was also thinking, I was wondering if there were certain tropes or tripwires that were intentionally being kicked. There is obviously a make me a sandwich, bitch tripwire that was, and I even sent you around this thing, which traced it back to an ancient Saturday Night Live skit featuring Tim Meadows. But there's something about that. It's a tripwire. It's kind of built into.
It's also the same thing as like saying go in the other room and make yourself look pretty. It's that really dismissive.
It's worse than that.
Well, she even says like a couple of the sandwiches she got home after covering something for Page Six, and she's in the kitchen making him a sandwich in her heels and her cocktail dress.
I saw that,
and that was even worse.
Like everyone makes sandwiches.
Like
that's what I wear when I make sandwiches.
But there's also another trope too, and I think and I'm trying to understand all this in my fumbling way. And one thing we're not going to talk about, but I did sort of I think I sent it around as we were looking at stuff is I became obsessed this week with this kind of demo reel that Tate George, the former UConn star, did for a reality show about himself. He did this in 2009 before he knew he was going to go on trial for running a Ponzi scheme, which is what's happening to him right now. But it is, I think it's 2009. It was a few years ago before he knew that he was going to be on trial for a Ponzi scheme. Although the demo reel itself, the attempt to sort of to do a pitch for a reality show. Looks like a reality show about somebody who's going to wind up on trial for a Ponzi scheme. But
if
in it,
he included sandwiches.
Yeah, there are no sandwiches. But there was a certain level of fractiousness in it, you know, like people not getting along and people, which I guess, I don't watch a lot of reality television, but I think that's sort of part
that's
of it.
That's at the core of it.
Yeah.
Right. If everyone gets along, if it's a big love fest, it's a boring show. Yeah,
then it actually is reality.
Right. Yeah.
So if you ask for your sandwich nicely, it's not interesting.
Right.
And if you like all the sandwiches you get, that's not interesting.
Well, I think that's an old thing. It's provocation, really. It's like it's trying to get to a place where you provoke some sort of reaction that actually gets attention and you are able to actually argue things that aren't even important. But it's the provocation which is the act. That's the thing. And that's what it's about. And
so
in
are
that
they
sense,
jointly provoking, do you think, or is
well, I mean,
I'm
wondering, are they just sort of like two performance artists who said, hey, let's do this?
I'm hoping for her sake too,
yes.
I think it's a fairly good bet. But there may, you know, within any performance artist's art, there's often a little kernel of reality. I mean, it probably did legitimately begin by him saying, well, yeah, I really want you to make me some sandwiches.
That's a great idea. We should tell
at some
Ted
point they
Cruz
realized
that
they could get rich doing that. All right, so we're going to sort of tie that into another kind of food, and it really does. The more that you delve into the Barilla story, you realize that there are some ways in which these stories line up exactly. But for those of you not following it, Guido Barilla, who's the head of Barilla Pasta, this is all over in Italy, where in Italy they're having kind of a public debate right now about commercials where food is served, and sort of how those commercials look and how traditional they look. In fact, I'll show my entire hand then and say they're actually having a debate about the fact that in all of the food commercials in Italy, there's still a husband and some kids sitting around a table and a wife serving them dinner. And they were kind of having this big dialogue about, well, is that good? Is that real? Is that the way people live anymore in Italy or anywhere else? And somehow or other, it got into it sort of led into Guido Barilla saying, well, I would never have a gay couple in my commercials, though gay people are welcome to eat my pasta. That sounds like some kind of never mind.
And buy it.
And buy my pasta and eat my pasta. That's not what I think of as a traditional family.
And he went further than that, too.
Yeah.
He did, gays shouldn't adopt. And,
right.
He pretty much made it a rant. Right.
Yeah.
And then he tried to walk it back.
Right. When he realized his bank account was at stake. I mean, one of the things about this is that you wonder why somebody in a position like that would shoot themselves in the foot in terms, unless he's so extremely rich that he doesn't care. But the other thing that struck me about this, though, too, is that this is Italy, where all TV, Mediaset runs all TV. Who's Mediaset? Berlusconi, who recently was convicted for fooling around, for actually exploiting a young woman. And these were women, the young girls who were brought in from North Africa. I mean, a thoroughly sort of sleazy background. And then this guy is coming up and saying, well, you know, I'm not going to have gay families shown eating my pasta. I mean, this is kind of a surreal universe in itself. I mean, that's another connection with Sandwich Woman.
If you want to talk about sandwiches and Barilla pasta, we'll only be on it for a little while. 860-275-7266. Get your call in right now before we move on to Ted Cruz and Bathrooms Without Walls. 860-275-7266. So, I mean, the next step obviously was for a lot of people to announce that they're not never eating Barilla pasta again. Lips that touch Barilla pasta shall not touch theirs, et cetera, et cetera. I don't know. Was that your reaction?
Well, I came home to that reaction yesterday. Yeah. Before I had even, you know, gotten to any sort of social media or seen any of this, I came home to find my roommate, who is a gay man, just throwing out pasta. And
I think you could eat the pasta you have.
What are you doing? What are you doing with that? And, you know, he's just in this rant, in this hysterics about, well, we can't eat this anymore. And then he explains to me, he pulls it up on the computer. And, you know, he literally was just throwing out food rather than be part of this. So that was my first interaction with this news story was a very visceral, personal one, and watching my dinner getting thrown out. So, and leftovers, too. He went after the leftovers.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So you know what you had last night? Sandwiches.
I did. I made him go and make me a sandwich in the kitchen.
First of all, I do want to say, don't get carried away because you already paid. If the pasta you already paid for, if you throw out the pasta you already paid for, I feel like Guido wins that round.
Give it
right?
to a food shelter.
Yeah. Maybe is there a way to send it back to Italy without a stamp? You know,
I like that idea.
Like collect.
Yeah.
Collect. Right.
I guess. I don't spend enough time in Italy to have a sense of how my sense in reading about this is that there is a different climate in Italy, that Italy maybe in terms of public discourse and the way these kinds of things are talked about, it's not even as far along as we are, and we probably still have miles to go here too.
Aren't they currently debating whether gay marriage is going to fly there or not? Isn't that a current topic in the government right now?
James keeps up
on. I think they have been talking about that, but it's incredibly complicated in Italy, that it's a completely fractured political system to begin with all kinds of things that are traded on the table, sort of, you know, like I'll give you, you know, required a church attendance on Sunday if you give up, you know, gay marriage or something like that. It's like there are all of these very basic things going on. And I think in many ways it is kind of backward. I mean, that they're not that because of all these disputes going on, there's this atmosphere around same-sex rights, for example, as, well, that's just another argument to have. And it's not on the basic level, say, of freedom to live your life as you are.
It's not about the substance of the argument.
Not yet.
It's just a chip to trade.
Right. Not yet. But it'll get there.
But he seems to have deliberately provoked. This seems very deliberate on his part.
I have a feeling it's part of that plutocrat syndrome. The whole thing that these people feel that they've gotten their success, they've gotten all this money, they're very powerful, and then they think, oh, it's time I talk to somebody, you know, and they get interviewed, and then they start blabbing, and they start really bringing out their views, and they have these views like as if they had hegemony over people's lives because they produce pasta. I mean, great.
Actually, there are some people whose lives they probably do.
Well, yeah, and James did circulate this Paul Krugman column today about that plutocrat syndrome. And we see it here in the United States. So you see, I mean, obviously the poster boy for plutocrat syndrome in the United States is Donald Trump, who talks about, in a very Guido Barilla-like way, talks about a lot of subjects that he hasn't really thought about very carefully, that he has no expertise in, that his only qualification for his only access to the podium is that he's a very wealthy man and an exhibitionist. But, you know, we can hear his views on almost anything. Thing up to and including the legitimacy of the president's birthplace. And
there's a great Twitter feud between him and Danny Zucker from Modern Family in which he continually gets trounced and humiliated by Danny Zucker. It's really an awesome thing to watch. And Danny Zucker is pretty fearless about it.
You have to wonder whether Trump is actually aware of how stupid his pronouncements are.
I think the answer to that lies on top of his head.
The dead cat.
I mean, he's walking around like that, and he's supposedly a billionaire. I mean, I know that begs a question, I think.
Just sort of back to Italy for a second. The Italian Parliament has been I'm so upset about pasta. The Italian Parliament has been campaigning to make overtly sexist advertising taboo. This is sort of obviously another difference between the United States and many European countries, that they can have a debate about that. I mean, it would be lovely if overtly sexist advertising went the way of the dodo, but you kind of hope not by government fiat. In fact, Barilla's comments came in response to criticism that his company's marketing campaign almost always showed, as I said before, a man and children sitting at a table with a woman serving them. Earlier this week, the president of the House of Deputies, Laura Boldrini, told Parliament that she was tired of seeing stereotypes reinforced in mainstream advertising. I always ask myself, would these ads run in other countries? The answer is no, absolutely no, she said. It is not acceptable to see an ad with the father and children always sitting at the table and the mother serving them. Well, all I can say is she should come and see our sandwich blogs.
Right.
You know, they're not that far behind us.
Right.
But this is, anyway, it really is a larger conversation. A larger conversation is sort of what is the family. And, yeah, I think, you know, you're right that Guido probably has these ideas that sound great, you know, in the back room of really fancy restaurants where, you know, he can sit around with his other rich friends and sound off. I don't think he had any idea how it was going to play. I'm sure he wasn't expecting the company to be kind of the laughingstock and pariah that it appears to be on the international stage right now.
Well, sometimes you hear of these stories too, of these companies where a CEO or somebody high up in the company says things like this, and they actually hire these very expensive public relations people to basically shut them up and wheel them back in, you know, and say, you know, don't talk about this stuff.
Damage
if you care,
control.
Is damage control.
Well, we're
exactly.
seeing a lot of it, like Abercrombie and Fitch.
That's right.
What happened
yeah.
when, you know, the CEO of Abercrombie is saying that they don't want ugly fat people wearing their
right,
clothes.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
And Chick-fil-A had their
yeah.
wonderful incident last summer.
Although Chick-fil-A, that sort of worked in their favor, I think, with a large part of their constituency, sadly.
And also just sort of got them in sort of top of mind for a lot of other people, too. Much like Ted Cruz, who we'll
yeah.
be talking about in just a second here. But I do want to quickly say that, I mean, as an indicator of how new they are to this game, Barilla put out a statement on behalf – the company put out a statement on behalf of Guido Barilla saying, doing this thing that we've talked about so many times – I apologize if my words have generated controversy and misunderstanding or if they hurt anybody's sensibility. You know, it really doesn't have to be in that conditional
yeah,
voice. We already
yeah,
know it did
yeah.
those things.
It's
yeah.
a little bit like he missed Mitt Romney being secretly taped with his 47% thing, and he decided to take it to the next level and just make a run around the secret taper and go direct to the public with his idiocy.
All right. Well, you have to bid well to pasta and sandwiches and bargaining chips. But before we do, here's Matt in Wallingford. Hi, Matt.
Hi, guys. I just wanted to add a little bit of a word about the sandwich lady. I thought we might have a self-fulfilling prophecy here. I would think that 300 sandwiches, you're going to get to a point probably way before 300 where the sandwiches are just going to run out of being novel. And they'll just be boring and rote, and they'll end up doing the same BLT over and over every Thursday. And then they'll just get bored of it and say, why did we want to get married in the first place anyway?
Well, I mean, it is sort of – that maybe is the metaphor. Actually, Patrick's typing back, no, the sandwiches actually look amazing. I agree. The ones that have been photographed, they do look really amazing. But that, it may be sort of one of the metaphors that they're going after is, can you have a marriage – where you surprise and delight one another on a regular basis. And that's the most benign interpretation of the
and
sandwich.
And confine that surprise and delight to sandwiches.
Yeah, well.
Well, and if it was maybe on an equal basis.
Yeah, maybe if he was making a couple,
yeah,
too.
Right. Yeah, right.
Well, according to the sort of the background to all this, he's the cook. She's not really a cook. She's had to learn to make sandwiches to participate. Right. He's actually an accomplished cook who does most of the cooking for them. So.
He might need a little public relations then.
All right, so somebody in this conversation definitely needed some public relations, and nobody seems to have it. All right, we're going to take a little break. We'll come back with Ted Cruz and Bathrooms Without Borders.
First we apply the chosen spray, place the fixings, twigs, the bread. That's how we make a sandwich, sha-la-la. That's how we make a sandwich.
And we're back. We're back with The Nose. Carolyn Payne, Jim Chapdelaine, and James Hanley here with The Nose. We'd love to have you participate in anything we talk about. The number to call is 860-275-7266. 860-275-7266. You may tweet us at WNPR Colin. I'm not going to talk about this when we do endorsements, so I'll talk about it now. Next week, October 2nd, Wednesday, at Watkins and School, we're doing what I think is going to be a pretty amazing panel discussion about the notion of ethical consumerism, the whole idea that you want to spend your money in ways that kind of conform to your values about the environment, climate change, animal rights, labor and workers' rights, those kinds of things. So you go to certain stores, you don't go to others, you eat certain kinds of food, make certain kinds of purchases. We're going to put some experts up there, kind of talk to you about the more finely grained aspects of this. Talk about whether it works or not. Talk about whether there are realities upstream and downstream from your purchase that you haven't really thought about all that much. We're going to have some interesting people in the audience asking questions. We'll be turning it into a radio show, but you won't be able to experience on the radio the full brunt of what we're going to do. It's going to be bigger and better and more exciting in a live context. So think about coming. You get the tickets from Watkinson.org. They have all the information there. I think you get your tickets from Brown Paper Tickets. It's only $15 a ticket, and that money goes to nonprofits, to the Hartford Stage and to the Mark Twain House and to Billings Forge, which couldn't be a more poignant example of ethical consumerism in and of itself. We've got a great panel. I won't list them all right now, but they're exciting people. This is going to be a fun conversation. We'd love to have you there. It's Wednesday, October 2nd. That's next week, 7 p.m. Get your tickets now. All right. So back to what we were talking about before. I want to talk about Ted Cruz. Ted Cruz took to the Senate floor, as probably everybody knows. It was a long overnight speech, went 20 hours plus. It touched on many topics. And as I came in here, the panel was already sitting here comparing their favorite topics, the things that came out. Anytime anybody does this, and this wasn't really, I guess, technically speaking, wasn't exactly a filibuster, but it might as well have been a filibuster. But anytime anybody does this, they wind up doing this huge core dump of everything that's in their brains because there's no way you can prepare for a 20-hour speech. So, I don't know, Jim Chapdelaine, what jumped out at you? What did you hear there?
Well, I mean, the absurdity of it, of course. But more importantly, I think, you know, it sort of pointed out to how successful Wendy Davis actually was when she did a real filibuster and sort of stalled that whole process. I thought she was great. Ted Cruz, it just seemed like really bad, like the Republican notion of dinner theater meets Waiting for Godot or something like that. It was just really this absurd notion and this obsequious, creepy guy up there just, like you say, emptying his brain with but it also set up this weird cannibalizing thing where Rand Paul got to come in and be the voice of reason. I mean, when has that happened before? So it really, to me, it made the Republican Party even more fractious than it is right now. And to what end? I don't know what he accomplished, except for the Darth Vader classic imitation.
Anybody want to jump in there?
Well, I think actually you've hit on it, Jim. I think that it's Rand Paul's stealth campaign for the presidency. It by putting Ted Cruz out there, probably getting the Koch brothers to pay him a great deal of money, this actually changes the story and makes him look sane. And so it's bizarre to me. I mean, you just look at that performance, just visually, it telegraphs psychopathic, sort of, you know, narcissistic. I mean, it just the words sort of, you know, fall out of your mouth looking at this and looking at his expression and then looking at the equally bizarre scene of the eager press waiting with their recorders.
Didn't he have a condition that only Yale, Harvard, or Princeton graduates be in his audience or something like that? Am I making this up? And because at some point,
no, that was Rand Paul.
He addressed the, you know, the academia.
Well, he sort of, you know, he has, similar to his dual citizenship in Canada and the United States, he does have dual Harvard-Princeton citizenship. He may have been sort of invoking that. Carolyn, what were you going to say?
Well, all right. So he referenced White Castle. I think he, like, praised their burgers,
he did.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. He referenced Star Wars, and I love a good Star Wars reference, but that was crazy.
I may, though, he did.
Luke, I am your father.
Yeah, yeah. The impression aside, it was just. And then when he quoted Duck Dynasty, I mean, just all over the map. It reminded me of a friend of mine had a concussion and she had to stay up all night. And she asked me, as you know, her friend who's a comedian, and she's like, "Look, I, you know, when you have a concussion, you can't watch TV, but you're supposed to stay awake." So she's like, "You got to come over and keep me awake." And the things that come out of your mouth when you're just talking. So you know, I was trying to keep my friend awake and keep her occupied, and that was this. That was I understand
that's
where he was coming from.
But that's great. Yeah, absolutely.
The question is, who had the concussion in this case?
You
know?
Yeah,
we did.
Yeah.
We're leaving a few things out. First of all, his invocation of the wisdom of Ashton Kutcher, one of the other sages. He actually cited a speech that Ashton Kutcher isn't really known for the speeches he's given, but apparently one.
Not at
dude,
all.
Dude, where's my speech?
Yeah, exactly. because his children were watching and it was bedtime, he read to them. A lot of people have pointed out he read Green Eggs and Ham, which is about the whole idea that you might like something that you haven't tried.
Right.
That you have to try something to find out whether you like it or not. And obviously, he's opposed to, you know, the United States trying health care. He's even sort of suggested at times that part of the problem is that some people will like it, will in fact become so accustomed to the kind of entitlement that he despises that'll be a problem. But
was there a requisite Hitler reference in there somewhere?
There was.
There was a Bataan death march.
Yeah, okay. It's got to be something like that. You have to bring that in.
But I'll just sort of offer, we got a couple of calls here. Number's 860-275-7266. 860-275-7266. If you're Ted Cruz and if you're trying to create a higher profile for yourself with the American electorate, either because you want to run for president or because you just want it, this isn't a bad strategy. And if you talk for 20 hours, you will sooner or later mention something that will resonate with almost anybody. And he did manage to tell some stories that were kind of interesting or you know, that you were not entirely resistible. I mean, the stories of his immigrant father and the way that he and his father would go to the movies and his father would watch the same movie in English three times in a row. He'd just sit through three showings of the movie until he actually understood or thought he understood what people were saying. I mean, ultimately, Ted Cruz's vision of America is really, really different from mine. But parsing it, not that I watched the whole 20 hours, God help me, but parsing it, looking at the kinds of things that he talked about, I began to understand anyway how he sees America. You know, and he sees America as this place where you can come and get this really crappy job, you know, at White Castle or someplace like that, you know, this really crappy, you know.
All waitresses are single moms.
Right. And get this really bad job and sweeping up or washing dishes or doing, you know, the worst possible least skilled job and gradually making your way up that chain. During that whole time, you won't have health insurance. He doesn't care. I'm not even disparaging him. I'm saying he doesn't care. He feels that sooner or later you'll achieve success and you'll maybe get your health insurance somehow or other. Meanwhile, the person who runs the White Castle will be able to open five more White Castles because they don't have to provide health insurance. I mean, you know, he sort of got his case out. It's not a case I particularly buy or cotton to.
So eventually all those people will end up running giant pasta conglomerates.
Yeah, it's sort of like the gifting table or any kind of pyramid scheme. It really, really can't work, actually.
Right, right.
Not everybody will be able to get up to the point where they get health insurance.
I think Harry Reid kind of crafted this. He cut a deal with Harry Reid, right? So give me this day, mm-hmm. and then the next day I'll vote against everything that I said. And it was sort of brilliant on Harry Reid's part to allow them enough rope to have their play, their school play in public.
Well, also, there's an interesting thing about this, too, that when you have an event like this taking so long and he's talking so long, the attention span of the American public is famously minimal, and you're going to get sound bites of probably the most outrageous things he says or some particular tick or something like that. You have to wonder in terms of, you know, exactly where it has gotten him as a result of this, that nobody has watched that whole thing, obviously. And people have watched a few bits and pieces of it. The way he looks when they have sound bites of him certainly doesn't look like a person who's really thoughtful and, you know, like in any way really doing anything other than making a performance of some kind that fits in with his own, what I think is a distorted view of the universe. But you have to wonder in the case of Harry Reid, why would he allow that? What was the deal? It's but not a filibuster.
Because doesn't it make them look buffoonish?
I suppose, but I think that it also makes the whole system look so completely lame and a failure. It looks like, you know, you're not really having a serious discussion at a time. There's a really serious issue approaching us.
Maybe the CIA is behind it, and they plan to use that tape to extract information from anyone by forcing them to watch the tape in its entirety over and over again in a loop.
They played Paul Anka to get Noriega out of his hiding place, so they'll do anything.
That's right.
You know, one thing that has sort of emerged is that Republicans, members of the Republican Senate caucus, they don't like Ted Cruz either. They don't like this kind of stuff. They weren't pleased by it. I don't think there's much of a mystery as to why Harry Reid let this happen. And I think, you know, each side, Harry Reid and Ted Cruz, not Harry Reid and the Republicans, because I don't think they, for the most part, relished what happened.
No. John McCain was...
But they were sort of rolling the dice. Ted Cruz is thinking, you know what, I'm going to maybe get what I need out of this, which is more visibility, more of an understanding, a human face on me, a chance to sort of
scary face.
Yeah, well, to some people, but he's rolling the dice. He's thinking maybe some people will like me.
Right. he's funding his campaign.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's one of my theories about this, actually about Ted Cruz generally, is that I think there's a certain block of voters who view somebody like that as being a sort of provocation in itself, that you can vote for this person just as a challenge, you know, just because you're so fed up with whatever the situation is in Texas, for example. Well, what the hell? Let's vote for him. Let's put him in there just because it's a show kind of thing.
And conversely, my phone that night rang off the hook with solicitors, political solicitors.
Oh, really?
Yes, rang off the hook.
You're on a list.
I must be on. My wife finally said, I don't know, he's dead or something.
Yeah,
and that still didn't stop him. And I finally caved and gave somebody $25 please stop.
Sort of why you're on the list.
Yeah, and it's sort of why Harry Reid...
Right.
It's why Harry Reid let this go forward, too.
Right.
You can raise money saying, look at these Yahoos I have to deal with.
Yeah. Yes.
All right. I'm just going to quickly go to the phones here. We got a couple of calls. I want to save at least 180 seconds for Bathrooms Without Borders. They deserve so much more. Here's Bill in Wethersfield. Hi, Bill.
Yeah, I'm curious. You know, people saying Ted Cruz is doing this because he wants to run for president. But since he was born in Canada, he can't run for president. Isn't that right?
I think he has dual citizenship.
Yeah, he does have dual citizenship. I'm not sure that his birthplace is Canada. I forget why he has Canadian citizenship, which he has since rid himself of anyway. He has,
to dodge the draft.
He has been chelated and cleansed of his Canadianness. But
to a dentist.
I'll go back and check. I'm not sure he was actually born in Canada. If you're born on foreign soil, it becomes a problem. It's one of the reasons that Lil Weicker often was cited as maybe somebody who maybe couldn't become president. Here's David in Woodbury. Hi, David.
Oh, hello. I heard some quotations from Ted Cruz which were so abstract that one really could make sense of them. But indeed, to be serious and to give him credit, I really believe they rose to the level of Dadaism.
that was a show from earlier this week. We did do a Dada show, and you're right. I mean, except Dadaism has to be intentional.
So maybe that was sort of dude descending staircase.
Oh, very good. Very good. All right, so we have a little bit of time left. This is an article that ran in Salon this week. It was actually sort of about innovations in particular in hotel design, but also the way that tends to happen, innovations in hotel design then get chased by innovations in home design. And the notion is the open floor bathroom, the open plan bathroom, the insertion. I'm being told that Ted Cruz was born in Calgary.
It's
an interesting question about whether he can be president then. The open floor, the open plan bathroom, the idea of putting all the things that are the bathroom out there among everything else.
Which Ted Cruz did cover in the speech.
I think that was an hour 14.
Oh, now I see.
It all comes together.
Hour 14. I have my own thoughts about this, and some of my thoughts, actually one of the featured hotels was, I think, the Lloyd in Amsterdam. I was recently in Amsterdam, not in exactly an open plan bathroom, but I became aware of the fact that perhaps the whole Dutch anticipation of bathroom privacy was a little bit different from mine. I could say more about that in a second, but I was wondering, anybody have any reactions to this? Well, you have a bathtub in your... A bathtub, though, that's all you have.
A bathtub, yes. I mean, we did it at the first of all, we had a suggestion from somebody who was helping us with the design, and it turned out to be one of the most wonderful things, having the bathtub in the same space as the bedroom. And, you know, it's like it's part of a relaxation, soaking in the tub and sort of being able to talk with my husband and sort of, you know, just, I don't like being shut away. I don't think either of us do in that case. But certainly I can see for a toilet, you know, you have an alcove or a space, certainly. But the idea of an open bathroom, I think it's a very relaxing, pleasant idea, and it doesn't feel like you're shut away in a closet.
The expression "excuse me" takes on a whole different kind of context here.
I was recently in a house on Fire Island, and it was a beachfront house, gorgeous house, and the entire second floor was the bathroom, essentially. I'm not joking. And it was all glass walls, the whole back of the house, so you're overlooking the beach, and it just was a giant tub just with this glass wall, and that's you come up the stairs to the second floor, and that's what you see. Yeah. And, you know, it looked great. But at the same time, I mean, anyone walking by the beach, anyone is going to see in there, which I think in the – it might be somewhat the point, maybe a little bit of that.
Well, there's that hotel on the High Line, which has like open bathrooms, like tubs anyway, which doesn't have any covering on the windows. You know, so, the High Line.
Right. Yeah. Well, I saw of it was at a high rise hotel in China when I was staying at, and it kind of jarred me at first.
Yeah. So is the toilet considered part of the bathroom?
Well, it sort of had a little. It was a very open. This house on Fire Island was a very open floor plan, but the toilet was kind of behind a little wall, like a little alcove.
So you're having a house party or something like that? Is that?
Yeah, I was in a house party in the house, and you did just kind of wander upstairs.
Somewhere in a different time zone?
You send them down to the basement, you know, you have the basement toilet.
Yeah.
Let me just say this. In return for not ever having anybody make me any sandwiches, I want a wall. I want a door to the toilet that's as thick as the wall that it connects to.
And a magazine.
I want a basket that has reading material in it. These are just sort of basic things. And maybe they locate me in a certain generational uptightness.
I'm with you.
But I can live there. And actually, I do, you know, James lives in Eastern Connecticut, which I believe is like just the cutting edge for Connecticut of all these kinds of innovations. I was actually at a house in Andover, Connecticut, more than 20 years ago, maybe 30 years ago. And they had done exactly this thing. They had an open plan bathroom. Probably the person, one of the people who lived there, maybe listening to the show right now. I remember looking at it and thinking and saying to my then wife, that can't be. I mean, you just can't. You can't do that.
I get the tub.
I understand.
The rest of it,
but it's sort of the same as having like an open door bathroom policy. I mean, you know, if you are with someone or like living with them for a long time, you know, they're in the shower, you're in there doing what you need to do.
An open door bathroom.
That's different than having like a house party or something like that.
Well, I think the rules are different when you have a house party.
Your in-laws are over.
But when you're with family or you're with your partner or your husband or wife,
open door bathroom.
Exactly. You're not really. I understand some people like to keep doors closed, but I think I feel certainly more relaxed doing that, and there's something very sort of tranquil about soaking in a tub.
Oh, I like the tub.
Tom, I'm
have
with
a conversation.
The tub.
There used to be those George Booth cartoons where there was a guy in a tub who always had the newspaper up, and his wife was sort of ironing near him,
right,
you know,
right.
And he
making
was always
sandwiches.
And he was making these pronouncements always from. And so I picture James doing that he's got the newspaper and he's saying, you know, the difference you make makes all the difference.
I have it on tape.
That sounds great to me. It's just the other thing you do in bathrooms.
The other thing doesn't work socially for me.
I really need to be alone. All right, so we have to stop there. We're going to come back with endorsements from our panel.
I do not like that Sam I am. Do you like green eggs and ham? I do not like them, Sam I am. I do not like green eggs and ham. Would you like them here or there? I would not like them here or there. I would not like them anywhere. I do not like green eggs and ham. I do not like them, Sam I am. Would you like them in a house? Would you like them with a mouse?
Oh, Justin Bieber, when we get married, I want an open plan bathroom so I can watch you put your floss in your teeth. Today's show was produced by Patrick Scahill, Betsy Kaplan, and me, with help from our interns Corey Breen and Greg Dyson. The part of Bill Curry was played by Ashton Kutcher. On Monday, our fall comedy special. And now, back to Colin.
Yes, our fall comedy special will include but not be limited to the improv team of Sherwood and Mockery, who are best known for Whose Line Is It Anyway? And Sammy Obaid. I hope I'm saying his name correct. He recently set a record. He did 1,001 consecutive days and nights of stand-up. So that's our comedy special. There'll be other features as well when we figure them out. It's time for endorsements. This is when we ask our panel to recommend things for you, things that you might enjoy. James Hanley, what have you got for us?
Well, on Sunday, we have a showing of the National Theatre Live Othello, which we actually ran actually really live on Thursday. It's an absolutely stunning production from London, the National Theatre. That's at 2:30 on Sunday. But then we also have a joint event regarding Macbeth at the Hartford Stage that on Wednesday, October 9th, we'll be showing Roman Polanski's film version of Macbeth And then you can buy a joint ticket, which will also admit you to one of the performances of Macbeth at Hartford Stage on Thursday. And then there'll be an on-stage discussion after the performance, which is a really extraordinary contrast to see those the Roman Polanski version and the live version at Hartford Stage. And then we also have the NT Live version with Kenneth Branagh of Macbeth coming up at Cine Studio, also playing October 17 through 19, so an orgy of Shakespeare.
So I should also say I'm about to go see Sleep No More on Saturday. My son and I are going to see Sleep No More in New York, which is this kind of odd deconstruction of Macbeth where you walk from room to room, basically, encountering the characters. So these National Theater things, I meant to ask you about this. So what you're seeing on your big, huge screen at Cine Studio, basically what's on stage
exactly,
at the National Theater?
Exactly, yes. Okay. And what is remarkable about it is that it has a style of presentation using the cameras and the lighting and the high definition that feels like being at the theater. It's really an extraordinary experience.
Yeah, I haven't been to one yet, though I go to all kinds of things at Trinity Cine Studio, but I want to do that. And we're all about Macbeth right now. My son's also studying it in college. So, Jim Chapdelaine, what do you have for us?
Well, first, I'm humbled by that. And culturally, I've just been – that was a mic drop. So I don't know how to endorse this quite, because it's a little bit like saying, this smells terrible, smell it. But there's an HBO documentary.
That's actually the name of a new Comedy Central series. But anyway, go ahead.
There is this – I saw this documentary about the poet Edward Hoenig and his sort of battle with Alzheimer's. It's a documentary on HBO, and it's really fascinating, and it's sort of there's a point where you get to this dirty underbelly of his life, and he's doing bird calls. But it is a very fascinating movie. And beyond that, as a entirely, what's beyond lapsed, whatever is beyond lapsed, former altar boy, having heard your show the other day about Pope Francis, I got to give the guy props. So that he's at least changing a little bit of culture, and who am I to judge?
All right. And Carolyn Bain.
All right. Well, first, I want to do an endorsement for The Evening with Mondo Guerra, which I know from Project Runway, which I know you're involved with,
yes.
Colin. You're a judge. I can't wait to hear your fashion opinions on everything going down that runway. But
never claimed I knew anything about fashion. I just want to say that.
Yeah. It's Saturday, October 19th, and it's at the New County Mercedes-Benz in Hartford, and it's going to be a wonderful event, and I think there's 25 local designers, and it's just for a wonderful cause, and
we'll
be a lot
of fun. Do you have to buy a Mercedes?
You do. Actually, the prizes for the designer, the designers who win, they get a lease of a Mercedes, which is a really neat thing. They get like a month-long lease, which I know isn't a lot, but a month in a Mercedes is better than a month in my Ford Focus. but it's a really, it's going to be a wonderful event. So if you are looking for something to do on Saturday, October 19th, you should check that out. And also, I want to endorse quickly the apple pie with the cheddar cheese on top at the Big E. So I know this is their last weekend, but if you go to the Big E, I had never had this. It's one of those bizarre combinations that, they have all those fried
deep
jelly beans, bacon s'mores. I didn't try any of that, but this apple pie with the cheddar cheese, which I guess you can make at home with all your Connecticut apple picking.
Those all sound great. So definitely, go to the October 19th event for Carr, because it's a great thing. And there will be sandwiches. You don't have to make them. So I'm going to ask for James's forgiveness and endorse a movie that's actually kind of playing at a sort of a crosstown rival, just because it's an unusual movie. And I'm sort of surprised it didn't get a bigger release, actually, because it's a pretty entertaining movie. It's called Short Term 12. Real Artways has it in their 5:30 slot this weekend. So if you're free at 5:30 p.m., Short Term 12 has an extraordinary performance by Brie Larson. It's all about sort of young people working at a short-term care facility for psychiatrically or behaviorally troubled children and adolescents, which doesn't really sound like it would be a lot of fun, but it actually kind of is a lot of fun. It's painful and poignant, but it also is a lot of fun in some ways. It has the only, as far as I can tell, non-annoying person from the newsroom on it, John Gallagher Jr., and he's terrific too. And it really is, it's a nice little movie. And the other thing, this is not exactly an endorsement. It's more that I'm so proud of myself for putting these two things together. So very quickly, if you're wondering what to do after Breaking Bad ends, what show you can possibly watch, dig down, see if you can get Broadchurch on demand. It's a British series. It also just ended. It's really good. But I have another TV point I want to make, which is that I've mentioned in the past this series, The Bridge, which is also kind of winding down to its conclusion. It's really good. It takes place in El Paso and in Juarez. In it is Ted Levine. He plays a very, very kindly sheriff who's kind of trying to help this young detective sort of sort through some of her own problems and solve these cases. Also, right now in the show Ray Donovan, Brooke Smith is appearing as the girlfriend of one of the brothers. The thing that's interesting about this is that in Silence of the Lambs, Brooke Smith is down in getting squirted with the hose and all that kind of stuff. Ted Levine is the guy squirting with the hose. He's Buffalo Bill. So they both have jobs right now. I was very proud of myself for figuring this
out.
Holy cow. All right, so Carolyn Payne, Jim Chapdelaine, James Hanley, thank you so much.
Okay, Justin, just suck on the linguine while you have your hand on Ashton's. Yes, just like that. I'm Kyone Wolf. Barilla has the right to say anything they want, and I have the right to film Justin Bieber and Ashton Kutcher making out in a swimming pool full of their product. A little more desperation, Ashton. Science.